Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Okay, so we're in the middle of the vetoes, the presidential vetoes. So this is the second episode of hopefully two episodes. I'd like to just get through this because I want to get back to grassroots and the details of the grassroots, what we need to be looking for, and kind of wrap up on the party because I didn't get a chance to do that. Forgive me, or excuse me. One of the things that I wanted to point out is that, and as I was leading into this, I mentioned during one of when I was talking about the party, I said there's a reason why this is really important. Because we have two framer presidents, actually the father of the Constitution, President Madison, and James Monroe, a man that was a participant at the Virginia ratification debate. So Monroe has no excuse for what he did with the Monroe Doctrine, not the Monroe Doctrine, the Missouri Compromise. They all start with M's. Well, not all of them, but those two. Anyway, the whole point is that we got two framers that actually identified the fact that what Congress was trying to do was they were trying to pull in a power that was not within the enumerated powers, and they called them on it. Now, Jackson, having been around a little bit and didn't want to, you know, contradict the father of the Constitution and Monroe, well, he followed suit, and that's why we're reading these. The reason why I tried to create this lead-in, you know, news at 11, probably two, three episodes ago, why it's really important that you listen to this, is because this is the foundation of challenging in the court. And when I say the court, I do not mean the federal court system, which is interconnected and almost symbiotically connected to the state court system, because they are all colluding. The court I am talking about is with the state legislatures and the state government. I want to be very clear. When you present this information to the state legislators regarding the veracity of the Department of Transportation, it's done. Not one of them can come forward because, as I've already read, Madison already said you had to amend the Constitution if you want to create a Department of Transportation. And I'm paraphrasing, but very specifically, the powers that were presented in that bill would have created the foundation of a Department of Transportation. And so Madison said, yeah, if you want to do this, we have to amend the Constitution. Even he even begged them to do that in his veto message, saying, you know, as much as I want to do this, as much as I see this needs to be done, I can't do this because it has to be amended to the Constitution. Same thing with Monroe. And that's where we're getting into as we dive forward into this. But with Jackson, I don't think Jackson really understood, because his tone, and when we get into his, as we come into this, you'll kind of see he actually has a different take on this, but he does support, and he did not divert or verge away from what Madison had asserted. Now, I don't have a lot of respect for Andrew Jackson as a man, because most people don't know this. Andrew Jackson was a congressman when George Washington was president, and when he was a retiring president. And if you didn't know, when George Washington walked through Congress to basically turn over the keys of the presidency or succeed the keys to John Adams, and this is the same day when Washington said, I am fairly out and you are fairly in, and we will see which is the better of us or the happier of the two. because I know George Washington, being the president and looking at the bickering between Hamilton and Jefferson and so forth, was very stressful for him. However, the point I'm trying to make regarding Andrew Jackson is when Washington walked through that that big room where Congress was convened at up in New York, the one person that kept their hat on, that did not show respect for the President of the United States, George Washington, the father of our country, was Andrew Jackson. He kept his hat on, and basically it was noted. And unfortunately, this is something that's not taught about Andrew Jackson, just to show you his character. A very narcissistic man that always placed himself above other people. I mean, I think that it was his narcissism that helped him go down to Mississippi and kick butt with the British. Anyway, because sometimes it's that desire to be, you know, best, of, you know, always succeed. And some people that fail a lot have that exact same problem. And Lincoln was one of those guys. He had an ego. Not that he had a deserving ego, that he was a success. He was a failure. And the more he failed, the more it bothered him, and the more he didn't want. And that's why when he became president and the states started seceding, he realized that the failure of the United States was going to be on his watch. And he goes, I can't fail again. Lord, please. And so it's interesting how the divine hand of providence has used these different characters and their character flaws to get things done. I give you that to ponder. Anyway, let me kind of move forward. As you know, the show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence regarding where we've been, what we've done, and what we need to do. And we actually provide you the academic-based solutions. We have a comment line. You want to call. You've got a comment. You got a question. Or if your comment, question, and topic is something that is, you know, worthy of a good conversation, because I'm very quick with that. I will be happy to call you up at your convenience, and we'll kind of record our conversation so that the listeners can hear. You know, I want you to understand that how children are, the youth today are those in the education system that are doing online college or online training are being robbed of a real education. Because if you're not in a classroom where you can hear the challenges of some of the things that are being said, whether it be said by the professor, whether it be said by a fellow student, you are missing that, because it is only one-on-one interaction, and it actually creates a level of control where people stop actually challenging professors. They just take everything that the professor says as gospel truth. Now, there are folks out there, and I have some, mainly, I know everyone in my family are challengers of the status quo, the challenges of the norm. I have a sister who's passed on, and may she rest in peace, but she was an activist. And I'll say a feminist, but she's not the feminist like the defined feminist today. She believed in women's rights and women being able to vote, but she was not a supporter of abortion and those types of things. She was a moral feminist. How about that? She wasn't a misandrist. She didn't hate men. She just wanted, you know, she wanted to be treated equally, fairly, or what have you. And so anyway, back to our comment line, 425-270-5416. And with that, I am going to dive into content, because content days are all about content and less about the marketing, the spins, and so forth. And in our last episode, we started covering some of the powers that were listed. And one of the powers that were being claimed to being incidental to the need for this bill, or the need for Congress to have this power, was to establish post roads. And as a matter of fact, the little clip was the first from the right to establish post offices and post roads. And I wanted to differentiate the two, because most people think that a post office and a post road are synonymous, that it has to do with postal express or what have you. A post road has nothing to do with postage or the mail system. A post road is a road that the government was to provide, the federal government was to ensure that a basic roadway network connected every single capital to the seat of government. And so as one starts looking at the expanse of the United States, it was incremental, right? So they started using the same roads to get out to the same territories. And along those roads, they interconnected the capitals of Oklahoma City and Topeka, Kansas, and all of these, because I'm not going to go through the whole geography, but Ohio, the Dakotas, Minnesota, all of these states that became states that actually had a new seat of government, they had to extend the post road for that state to be able to connect to this network. And so, however those networks were created, the federal government was the one to establish that network and to maintain that network. And as I was just saying, as we ran out of time, most of the network highway systems, such as I-5, Highway 1, now on the East Coast, going north and south, you know, from Tallahassee, Florida, up to Washington, D.C., and up to Maine, okay, that one north-south interstate does connect to Washington, D.C., but I-5 and many of the 15, the federal government paying for these north-south highways to connect the southern states to the northern states are not post roads. They are not within the Constitution. We'll be right back after this. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And whoo, I barely got into that that break before I started talking over myself. So I hate doing that. Anyway, let me get back to this content because I hope I've explained what a post road is and why the general government does have a responsibility for creating, establishing, and maintaining a post road. Okay, so moving on, because And the reason this is important, because they were saying, well, they have this right to do these things. And it's in the Cumberland Gap was not a post road. To be clear, it was an ancillary road that was a state responsibility. Okay. So let me kind of repeat what Monroe, because I don't want to just start going through the list. And this is why he basically listed these supposed or alleged powers that were used as a justification as incidental to creating these other powers. And so this is Monroe saying, quote, "It has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. It is claimed only as being incidental to someone or more of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. First, from the right to establish post offices and post roads. Second, from the right to declare war. Third, to And the reason I kind of hesitated on this right to declare war, you have to understand that declaring war is declaring war very specifically to an enemy. And I don't understand how a road system has anything to do or to be proper or necessary for Congress to determine whether we need to go to war or not. What do roads, as a matter of fact, what is healthcare? What does any topic out there have to do with the right to declare war? I mean, you could see as he starts to list these powers that they were using to justify, to be able to create this unconstitutional power. Well, the right to declare war was really a far reach. I mean, come on. It's almost the same as... Let me see. The right to call up the militia. No, I mean, that is a function that they have, but the roads are not a part of, you know, the necessity of them to do that. Anyway, so from the right to declare war, third, to regulate commerce. What? How what are these supposed to be control roads that they're going to actually start putting tolls? No, as a matter of fact, this comment, the right to regulate commerce, and for Madison and Monroe to clearly call these out to say, no, a highway system does not fall within our right to regulate commerce. Why? Because commerce and the regulation of commerce, as defined in the Constitution and the ratification debates, was the federal government's responsibility to tax and place imposts upon all commerce coming in and to ensure the control of commerce going out, that we weren't feeding our enemies, that they were the ones to control the interchange of commerce from foreign entities to the United States and back. They also had a responsibility. I want to make this very clear. They did have a responsibility to ensure that one state could not play economic games or economic warfare against another state. And a case in point, New York, because it being a very large port and integral to providing commerce in and out, the flow of commerce for the many states that surround it, well, then New York could all of a sudden start adding and playing the game of taxing tonnage on its roadways and highways to say, you want to bring your commerce through here, we're going to tax it. We're going to tax it by the pound, or we're going to tax it by the load. However they wanted to do that. That is why in the Constitution, they said that states can do it only for what is actually necessary. In other words, if you're going to claim that, you know, you have to have this tonnage, you know, on commerce, and that's why the entire highway network system in every state, has these truck stops to weigh the trucks on their highway systems to verify the tonnage and to make sure where this is coming from. And if it's out of state commerce, that they pay a certain amount of whatever they call that. But it's a tax. Fundamentally, it's a tax. So that the states can recover the wear and tear of other states' commerce running through their state. That's all. And so that was a constitutional power that the federal government had, but they did not have the ability to tell you you can't make incandescent light bulbs or that your vehicles had to have emission standards. They have no constitutional standing to do that. Okay, so fourth, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare. Another reach. There's just nothing there that can connect to the need for a highway system. From the power to make all laws necessary and proper into the execution, all the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Okay, carrying into execution. So I don't believe that they were actually citing the Constitution here. As a matter of fact, when I, you know, when you look at how this goes, I believe, and I'm going to pull it up for you because I think it's really important that everybody understands that in Article 1, Section 8, when they talk about the power to provide or the necessary and proper clause, this is what the necessary and proper clause actually says. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers, okay? So now the foregoing powers is key. They can only make laws that are necessary and proper for the foregoing powers. What they wrote and what was claimed, the powers to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution all the powers vested by Congress. So they changed it from the specific foregoing powers to this concept that anything that Congress wanted to do that they created a power for. In other words, they already started using legalese and sidestepping the absolute language of the Constitution so that they could stretch and aggrandize themselves in giving themselves more power. I mean, these are age-old political tactics that, I'll just say, nefarious politicians use in trying to expand their power. And as Washington said, this is how governments are destroyed. And then finally, he says, sixth and lastly, from the power to dispose and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and other property of the United States. So needful rules and regulations respecting the territory. It doesn't mean that Congress and the federal government and the United States people are responsible and accountable for building the entire infrastructure up of a state. No, a state needs to establish itself, and it needs to prove to the United States or Congress that it has the ability to create its own commerce so that it can sustain itself. Why would you create – this is basically – going down this path and this paradigm that they injected basically created this concept that, oh, well, we could actually start creating our own states that would become dependent on the government. And so we would constantly feed them. And this is in violation of the uniformity clause. They can't treat one state or territory differently than how they treat others. They don't have this ability. And so... and this is Monroe again, going back to what he says. And this is where he just squares up at the plate, swings the bat, hits it square and out of the park. According to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers, nor from all of them united, and in consequence, it does not exist. Having stated my objections to the bill, I should now cheerfully communicate a large reason on which they are founded if I had time to reduce them to such a form as to include them in this paper. And the last, I'll say half of this paragraph, the last portion of his veto message is where he kind of, wants to help them understand because he wants to see this Department of Transportation created. So here is a man, second president of nobility and integrity that did not compromise politically the Constitution of the United States to say clearly, the only way we can exercise a power that is not enumerated is to amend the Constitution. Okay, so getting back to what I started off this episode and kind of led in earlier episodes, why is this so important? Well, imagine you articulating the argument in your state legislative offices, or actually on the floor in front of all of your state legislators, to create this argument of how Madison clearly delineated how these things that they've been using for years that I called the mystical clauses, the necessary and proper, the exclusive legislation is another one, the Commerce Clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, the Supremacy Clause. These clauses, as Madison and Jefferson clearly pointed out, not Madison and Jefferson, Madison and Monroe in this particular case, these clauses are not portals to grant the government any new power. Those clauses only pertain to the enumerated powers. In other words, the Supremacy Clause, the federal government is supreme only. Well, you know what? I'm going to hold on because I don't want to bleed into this these promos. So hold on, and I will get back to the only reason why the federal government is supreme. And we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let's dive into, because I realize we're halfway through the show and I still haven't gotten into Andrew Jackson. I really don't want to necessarily bleed into another another episode, but the Supremacy Clause, why? And this is so important. I want everybody to understand what the Supremacy Clause means, because too many people believe that the Supremacy Clause means that the government, the federal government, is supreme in all things. Whatever they choose and whatever they dictate, they are supreme in. And that is not what the Constitution says. The Constitution says this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. What that just said was that this Constitution and any laws that are made that are directly in harmony, in congruence, in compatibility with the enumerated powers of this Constitution. In other words, not laws that which shall be made on the whims of Congress or the discretion of Congress. No, laws must be made in harmony with the Constitution. And all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States. I'm going to stop right there. What that means is the only authority that the United States has is those enumerated powers, which means that if Congress wanted to make, or if the Senate wanted to ratify a treaty with the United Nations taking away our right to bear arms, they do not have that authority because, not one, it's not an enumerated power that they can do that, and two, they're expressly they're expressly forbidden to be able to take away our right to bear arms in the Second Amendment. So for them to sign a treaty that would actually violate the Constitution in any way is repugnant and unconstitutional. And I've actually read this out of the ratification debates as George Nicholas explains this. Again, why the ratification debates are so important. Now, we're not going to really dive into the ratification debates probably until March, or when I am going to be heading into my surgery, because I will be down for a while and I want to be able to give you enough good content that you can just chew on. And what I'm hoping you do while I am, you know, recovering and being able to finally get back into the studio to answer some phone calls and so forth, so I hope that you take note, you write down, and you say, wow, this is awesome, this is great, you know, I want to talk about this, and that way you can send your comments and or questions via the phone, as I've given you, 425-270-5416. You can, you know, make your comments, and then when I can finally get back to the studio, because with the hip replacement, I'm going to have a walker. I'm not going to be able to go, you know, far downstairs or what have you. Now, I don't expect to be convalescing because I'm still a good, healthy young man, or I should say, I'm not as old for my age as what most people are. So I expect to be able to recover quickly. And the doctor says probably within a week or two, I should be able to start going up and downstairs. But he wants to, and they want to make sure that I don't push myself, because it takes, and apparently these types of surgeries take about a year to truly heal. And so you don't want to, you know, while you think you may be strong enough, you definitely don't want to get to a point where you re-damage or you actually undo some of the things that they've done, because I've actually heard and I know that you can really screw things up. But anyway, back to the Supremacy Clause. Of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. In other words, under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. And the final part that is really important that you understand, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws or any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Now, obviously, there can't be contradictions with the United States, so all U.S. or state constitutions must be in compliance with the U.S. Constitution. This is why they use this line to basically say, hey, if the federal government is doing it, you can consider it constitutional because we wouldn't do anything unconstitutional. Therefore, you must do these things in, you know, in appeasing or meeting the things that we're doing, such as offices for the Environmental Protection Agency, energy, and all these other unconstitutional powers that they've usurped. Now, it would be a huge red flag if the federal government created a power like the Environmental Protection Agency and said, well, you guys don't have to, you know, create an office for this because we know this isn't a constitutional power. Right? I mean, wouldn't that tip you off to say, well, then why are you doing it? So, of course, everything they choose to do is constitutional, and they're going to tell you that it is. But the Constitution tells you otherwise. But they don't want you to read the Constitution. They don't want you to understand the Constitution. And they definitely don't want you to start defending and using the Constitution against them. That's why the education system is designed to maintain illiteracy and actually misinform people regarding the Constitution. So, anyway, let me dive into, because I've got Andrew Jackson. And as a matter of fact, this is not Andrew Jackson's veto message. What this is the highlights of Andrew Jackson's veto message to the representative. And this was May 27th, 1830. To the House of Representatives, gentlemen, I have maturely considered the bill proposing to... hear the narcissist? I have maturely considered the bill. Quote, a subscription of stock in the Maysville, Washington, Paris, and Lexington Turnpike Road Company, and now return the same to the House of Representatives in which it originated with my objections to its passage. Every member of the Union in peace and in war will be benefited by the improvement of inland navigation and the construction of highways in the several states. Let us then endeavor to attain this benefit in a mode which shall be satisfactory to all. To avoid these evils, it appears to me that the most safe, just, and federal disposition could be made of the surplus revenue. Now, remember, everybody basically pointed to Jackson as being the guy that balanced the budget. Now we see that, oh, we got this surplus revenue. Well, let's spend it on something good, right? The surplus revenue would be its apportionment among the states according to the ratio of representation. And should this measure not be found warranted by the Constitution, that it would be expedient to propose to the states an amendment authorizing it. So here he's already poking to say, hey, when we have excess money, because apparently Congress was saying, hey, since we have this excess money, let's use it to buy these companies, these turnpike road companies. The Constitution power of the federal government to construct or promote works of internal improvement presents itself in two points of view. The first, as bearing upon the sovereignty of the states, within whose limits their execution is contemplated. The second is asserting the simple right to appropriate money from the national treasury in aid of such works when undertaken by state authorities, surrendering the claim of jurisdiction. Although frequently and strenuously attempted, the power to this extent has never been exercised by the government in a single instance. It does not, in my opinion, possess it, and no bill, therefore, which admits it can receive my official sanction. But in the other view of the power, the question is differently situated. But in the other view of the power, the question is differently situated. The ground taken at an early period of the government was, quote, that whenever money has been raised by the general authority and is to be applied to a particular measure, a question arises whether the particular measure be within the enumerated authorities vested in Congress. If it be, the money requisite for it may be applied to it. If not, no such application can be made. Now, I'm going to stop right here, and I'm going to go right back to telling you. Remember I told you, go look at all that debt of the United States. Go look over the course of the past century of how much money the United States has spent on things that are not enumerated, as Jackson just said. In other words, they can tax, but they cannot apply it to anything that is not within the enumerated powers. That would be fraud, fraudulent spending, and fraudulent government. So, I've got you right here to actually, here's some evidence of Jackson actually pointing out that the federal government can only spend tax dollars on those things necessary and within the enumerated powers. Independently, moving on, he says, independently of the sanction, well, actually, let me stop. So what does that mean to all that debt? We can go through and we can actually quantify how much money we have spent outside the government's authorization, look at the debt that we've taken on and to have to spend that money. And I'm telling you right now, my friends, every penny of our debt would be canceled. Every penny. of our debt would be canceled. China, are you listening? All the money you think we owe you, we do not. It is fraudulent. You went into a fraudulent contract in giving us money on basically trying to destroy us. Folks, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so now, what's interesting is here goes Jackson, Andrew Jackson, President Jackson, and he actually cites James Madison. So in other words, he chooses to stand on the father of the Constitution's shoulders in holding valiantly and virtuously this principle that the general government cannot do things that are not enumerated within the Constitution. And he says this: independently of the sanction given to appropriations for the Cumberland and other roads and objects under this power, the administration of Mr. Madison was characterized by an act which furnishes the strongest evidence of his opinion of its extent. A bill was passed through both houses of Congress and presented for his approval, setting apart and pledging certain funds for constructing roads and canals and improving navigation of water courses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states and to render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense. Quote, or close quote, regarding the bill as asserting a power in the federal government to construct roads and canals within the limits of the states in which they were made, he objected to its passage on the ground of its unconstitutionality, declaring that the assent that the, and so this is where he actually even echoes what he says, even if the states allow you to do this, it is still a violation. Anyway, he says, declaring that the assent of the respective states in the mode provided by the bill could not confer the power in question, that the only cases in which the consent and secession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution. Superadding to these avowals his opinion that, quote, a restriction of the power, close quote, to provide for the common defense and general welfare to cases which are to be provided for by the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution. I have not been able to consider these declarations in any point other or in any other point of view than as a concession that the right of appropriation is not limited by the power to carry into effect the measure for which the money is to be asked, as was formerly contended. The views of Mr. Monroe upon this subject were not left to inference. During his administration, a bill passed through both houses, so he's citing Monroe, conferring the jurisdiction and prescribing the mode by which the federal government should exercise in the cases of the Cumberland Road, he returned it with his objection to its passage. This brief reference to known facts will be sufficient to show the difficulty, if not impracticality, of bringing back the operations of the government to the construction of the Constitution set up in 1798, assuming that to be its true reading in relation to the power under consideration, and I think that 1798 is a misprint, set up in 1789, but anyway, that's how it was written. I think he actually switched those last two numbers because there was no setup or construction of the Constitution in 1798. So that was a misprint or a typo or handwritten typo. Assuming that to be its true reading in relationship to the power under consideration, thus giving an admonitory proof of the force of implication and the necessity of guarding the Constitution with sleepless vigilance against the authority of precedents which have not the sanction of its most plainly defined powers. For although it is the duty of all to look that sacred instrument instead of the statute book to repudiate it or to repudiate at all times encroachments upon its spirit, which are too apt to be affected by the conjecture or peculiar and facilitating circumstances. It is not less true that the public good and the nature of our political institutions require that individual differences should yield to a well-settled acquiescence of the people and conferred authorities in particular constructions of the Constitution on doubtful points. So here's the kicker. And this is where he differentiates somewhat. In the other view of the subject and the remaining one, which is my intention to present at this time, is involved in the expediency of embarking in a system of internal improvements without a previous amendment to the Constitution, explaining and defining the precise powers of the federal government over it, assuming the right to appropriate money to aid in the construction of national works to be warranted by the contemporaneous and continued exposition of the Constitution. Its insufficiency for the successful prosecution of them must be admitted by all candid minds. Here it is. If it be the wish of the people that the construction of roads and canals should be conducted by the federal government, it is not only highly expedient, but indispensably necessary, what a previous amendment to the Constitution delegating the necessary power and defining and restricting its exercise with reference to the sovereignty of the states should be made. Without it, nothing extensively useful can be effected. The right to exercise as much jurisdiction as is necessary to preserve the works and to raise funds by the collection of tolls to keep them in repair cannot be dispensed with. Do you get it? Do you understand that they cannot just start doing something? They have to have the amendment first. And for them to do all of the things that they've been doing that are all unconstitutional and all the money that they've spent, for the Department of Hugh under Eisenhower, Health, Educational, Welfare, the Department of Labor under Teddy Roosevelt, the Department of Commerce under Teddy Roosevelt. All these things that they've been doing in expanding their powers and getting into things that are outside the defined terms and definitions of the Constitution during the ratification debates. That's why these things are so important. It's all unconstitutional, and that money, that debt that we have, is absolutely fraud. And just wait till Britain finds out. Just wait till Japan finds out that they've been duped. And actually, I tell China, all of these nations, Britain, I'm here to tell you right now, all nations that have given us debt, if you fail to understand our constitutional republic and the enumerated powers, and you did not know, and you did not do the due diligence to discover that our general government has no authority to spend money on welfare, to spend money on corporate welfare, to throw out the money you give us to corporations and for all these other things and all these other nation-building things, this is all unconstitutional. And you are complicit in the fraud against the American people, and we will not be held accountable. I'm sorry. The Constitution protects us from this. These are the laws of this land. And if you want your due pay, we will be happy to ship you every politician, both alive and dead, so that you can get your pound of flesh and burn in effigy these traitorous politicians who have failed to fulfill their oath of office. There you go. You want your pound of flesh? We'll ship it to you. And you can have this great burning tour of these nefarious American politicians who did everything they could to undermine our Constitution. Whether they knew what they were doing or ignorant, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And it's time we start using that vernacular, and it's time we start actually taking a stand. This is our Constitution. It is our state's Constitution. We must make these arguments. Getting back to what I was saying, we must go into our state legislators' offices, or actually onto the floor of the state legislators. We need to record this testimony and actually give unto them the truth that if the federal government was denied the ability to create a Department of Transportation by both President Madison, the father of the Constitution, and how he eloquently stated that you cannot do this. James Monroe, he clearly stated how you couldn't even create inclinations or derivatives of the powers that exist within the Constitution to grant this power. And even Andrew Jackson, who absolutely quoted both of those men and maintained the virtuous position that the federal government could not assume those powers, that even if the states allowed it, it would still be unconstitutional, and they still don't have the legitimate constitutional powers to do this. So therefore, if three presidents said we can't have a Department of Transportation without an amendment, then I ask you, where is the amendment for the Department of Transportation that we have today to exist? And if we can't have the Department of Transportation under the guises we have been told and under the clear evidence that these two framers and one other president has asserted in protecting us from tyranny, unconstitutional law, and unconstitutional government, then where are the amendments for the Department of Education, the Department of Labor? Show me the amendment that grants the federal government the Department of Energy. Show me the amendment, and you end your assertion to your state legislators in demanding those amendments for all this unconstitutional government. Folks, we've got to start Republic Review if we're going to heal this nation. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument
of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic. I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.